All right, so we're kicking off today with a question from Linda first. With what you know at this point, what's your position on the safety of taking GLP-1s for weight loss? My 25-year-old daughter would like to lose about 30 pounds. She's discussed with me. We're both a bit concerned about side effects and what we've heard about the difficulty in getting off of them once started. Of course, she'd much rather lose weight on her own, but knows it will be hard, annoying, and frustrating along the way. She's hoping that she has the determination. So, gosh, we could probably spend the whole hour on this one, or at least a good chunk of it. So if anybody else has a question, by the way, related, welcome your input as well. And I'm going to let a couple other people in here. So multiple things in the answer to the actual question, okay? And then I'm going to follow that up with an answer to what would my advice be to her if she were my daughter, or for instance, my daughter-in-law was, which is much more delicate. So that's the mother of my grandson, by the way, but right. I would tell you what I would suggest to them as a loved one with their best interest, knowing what I know and where I would start with that. So in terms of safety, I think we can safely say that if somebody has exhausted all of the other avenues and they are living the lifestyle that has to go around, along with GLPs and not getting results from doing that, and they have maybe yo-yoed or gone down this path and that path, and they have not worked for whatever reasons, whether it's a strong urge, a strong calling, they can't stop food noise and feel like they have no control over it. And I think a lot of us might have at once, and hopefully we don't anymore, see it as, this is a willpower or a discipline thing. There's far more going on than any of us knows if we don't deal with it. So I can speak to it only from 4.5 decades of working with people and the knowledge of the research that the receptors, the differences in the brain and chemistry, in the reaction and response to exercise is all different in people for some genetic reasons and people who generally have obesity or are obese. Let's qualify that. They're in a certain condition where that describes them. They don't respond the same way to exercise. And so, fitness trainers, we've been talking about this with them for, gosh, almost 12, 15 years now, that it's been very problematic because trainers will take those people and want to, like, biggest loser them and punish them into the weight loss. And that never sticks, as many of us know, the end of the story of biggest loser. It doesn't work that way because what we haven't done is been able to change the switch in their head, and they don't have the same positive response to exercise that many of us who are called to do it do. So there are a lot of things going on, but I would say if somebody has made all of the lifestyle changes that need to be there and present, you're lifting weights, you're moving regularly, you're making changes in the diet. I don't mean on one, I just mean a dietary lifestyle that is conducive, and you've done those types of things, then you're ready to do GLP because those things all have to be in place. Because when you come off of the GLP, if you do, you still will have to deal with those things, and they will be there. And the weight loss will not stay weight loss. Regain is imminent if we haven't gotten to those lifestyle changes, made them a part of our life, changed the muscle mass that is critical to be there. However, for people who cannot seem to do it by themselves, the good habits that they've got are not getting them the results that they deserve, then I do think it's possible. And what we know is that you can titrate, which means You can start with a small dose and then you work your way up. And so you're doing it as needed, but then you also can titrate down. So recent podcast episode that I did with Sarah Kennedy on a product called CaloCurb is another option. So CaloCurb is, this is not doing it yourself. This is relying on something that is a bit more natural than a pharmaceutical drug, and it is supporting the quieting of the brain for the cravings that is very different than hunger. It's not squelching just the hunger, it's squelching the cravings. And the cravings is more of a mental, emotional, cognitive piece. So it really depends on who are you and where is the challenge? Is it hunger or is it something else? So we know that there's ghrelin and leptin involved in our hunger and satiety hormones. And sometimes those are off. Quite often, those are off in someone who at the moment is overweight or what we would be classifying as obese, which is just a medical marker for 30 or higher percent body fat. Those things, this can be taken on an as needed basis. So starting to titrate on, in fact, you don't take two, you take one, and you take it at one meal and now both to get your body used to it. But this is not inhibiting your own GLP-1. It's actually inspiring the GLP-1. So there's a big difference here. So that might be another step along the way, and I would go and listen to that episode with Sarah Kennedy. She's out of New Zealand. I'm trying to think. I know the accent. Where was it? And she is behind it. Like she is the science geek and guru behind it. And that's worth a listen. And I think since then, I've also done one. And, I have seen many clients come through. Many students, many members, private clients come through and it works for some and it doesn't for others. Like micro to full dose, some don't respond. And there are reasons why that might be true, but it's a lot to unpack. And so you have to realize it's not a magic pill. It doesn't necessarily work for everyone. So you have to go in knowing this is something that I'm trying, but ideally, you'd be working with a practitioner who would be doing a let's start small and work our way up, and let's really identify the problem in terms of why haven't we been able to be successful ourselves with the lifestyle changes? And is it the more psychological, mental, emotional piece of the noise just calling. And again, I want to make everybody here aware that is not a lack of willpower or a lack of discipline. It is something stronger than you. And we know that genetically, some of us are predisposed to addiction. And this is very similar. So it is an illness, so to speak. It's not something that, and it's been since, we used to label it as simply this is a classification of where you are in terms of your body fat percent, like you're excellent, you're, good, above average, you're, overweight or you're obese. We used to classify it as that. And now we literally recognize it as a disease. And so important that it's treated as such. So I want to make sure everybody's here respectful of it's so much more than that. And I think we've learned a lot in these last couple of years with the advent of GLP. So that's where I would go. In terms of safety, I think we know a lot. And I think that it's extremely safe. I think side effects can be minimized. I think you don't need to be necessarily on a full dose. And I think the answer is finding out what is the minimal effective dose for you. And you only can find that out by titrating and starting with a smaller dose and working your way up to it. Side effects will probably increase as you go up. What I've seen across the board is just, a wide variety of things. I think the biggest concern we all thought going into it was people are going to lose muscle mass. And indeed, they will if they're not strength training, not eating adequate protein. However, I can tell you that, I've got a client who, for whom that's not true up. She lost 30 pounds. She didn't, because of mostly busyness, just in lots of trouble, actually lift weights during, and then realized that she was getting weaker and that it probably contributed the low calorie intake. She wasn't hungry, so she wasn't eating a lot. And it's not just the protein, it's micronutrient density. We all have to remember, on or off of GLP, if we dial up that protein so high, we're squeezing out micronutrient dense foods like vegetables and even healthy carbohydrates, our energy levels ultimately will suffer. And in older adulthood, it's been proven that in order to have both strength and muscle mass, we have to have high protein, but high micronutrient density. That means yes to the protein on the plate, plan around it, but the rest of that plate better be full and colorful. And you want lots of diversity in your diet. Eating the same foods over and over is probably a recipe for, not what you want in terms of end result. So I would say, in terms of safety, we've seen that it can be done very well. And, any negative side effects can be mitigated. You're least likely to have them at lower doses, more likely at higher doses. The biggest one, though, I think, is not what we feared. It's not muscle loss, and it may not even be the, constipation, because you are slowing things down on purpose. You're probably going to change in irregularity, but it is that you're eating so little that you're going to struggle to get in adequate micronutrient density. And it's a dual-edged sword. So I think for a woman in midlife, not a 25-year-old, if we were talking about ourselves or peers, we want to look at where's the biggest urgency for you and your health going forward. If you're carrying excess weight and you're considering this, or maybe you're doing it and no judgment, that could be the first thing to help you reduce risk of disease and of inflammation. And GLPs are also known for that. And it's part of the reason a lot of people are doing a microdose, the longevity play. But when you're doing that, that is not a weight loss play. I mean, what gives you inflammation reduction is probably not giving you a significant weight loss, if any, but it may be supporting, reducing bloat or inflammation weight. There may be a bit of that initially, but if you're on it long term at a low dose, you're probably not going to experience that. It's not like an insurance policy against weight gain by any means. You still got to have good habits, right? So if you are drinking a lot of coffee or caffeine and it's elevating blood sugar levels, I mean, you're going to struggle with that. You can't say, well, I'm taking this, so I'm going to go ahead and do that. That, unfortunately, is where we do see problems, where people say, I'm doing this GLP, so I've got this insurance policy, and then they don't change their diet. What it is they are eating when they have this limited appetite is not healthy. That's where I think we get in trouble. And I think, unfortunately, in another 5 or 10 years, we'll really see where has the fallout been, and what are we looking at now with bigger numbers having used it? Because it's not going to go away. We're going to see more and more of it. And I'm gonna kind of go comment by comment down. So if we've added more comments about this, I will come back to it, but I just want to not skip around. So Gay is next. I listened to what I assumed was your most recent podcast yesterday. Enjoy them so much. Was surprised that you have been doing GLP. Yes. So, and I did, and I started it, if you remember, 2 years ago. No, actually, it was just last year. It's been a long year. And I am a baby nanny right now, so there's that. I smell like barf, by the way. But Last year in June, I did stem cell therapy. So I actually, same physician who did my stem cell will do GLPs. And we decided to do that as a follow-up to keep inflammation down afterward. And, here's my, result after that period of time. None really. nothing noticeable, and in lab work, I'm, if I've seen any improvements in inflammatory numbers, I never saw inflammatory numbers on my labs necessarily. I felt them more around my middle. I know, and when you're inflamed, right? It's just, I know. And I'm guessing that you do too. Maybe you haven't put the word inflammation on it, but it's like, there are times when it's just going really well and it's really clicking, and then others where it's just like, yeah, meh, it's here, it's okay, I'm not sick, no, not even close to disease, but it's just like I don't have that edge, and so I was willing to do it and wanted to do everything I could to make sure that the stem cell and the aftermath of 3 to 6 months, where it's really still taking, and it's not that it's over. If I nurture that knee, it's gonna be better and better. But I just really didn't see a lot. So, I'm not interested in titrating up. I'm just, here I am and here I'm hanging. So, my next discussion probably with her is, do I want to stay on it or do I want to go? What's the value of staying on it? Because I'm like on the fence, and it doesn't cost that much as a compound pharmacy. When you're doing a microdose, you can do that, and so it's not, even close to what some are doing. So that little vial lasts me a very long time. But yes, absolutely, I did. And, I'm not quiet about it. I don't go around bragging about it. I'm certainly not going to show myself giving a shot on social media. But I'm a little appalled by those who do. It's almost as if they're selling it. But, I'm also just not finding any result. And I think that's not because I'm a non-responder. I think the opposite. I think, I was already doing well enough that when you go from on the couch to exercise at all, you're going to see the 70% of your results come from doing that. And then the more you do, you're going to see very little return on investment. At some point, you'll start seeing it come back. With the GLP, I think that's similar. I would say my response has been nil. I mean, almost nothing that I've noticed. So, I think my lifestyle habits have a far greater power. That's my opinion, and I don't think that any individual is enough to give you a bias, because so many people respond so differently. Women in menopause in the same state, whether peri or menopause transition or postmenopause, I think we're going to respond so differently because of our pool of your genetics, your history, your habits, what else has gone on and given your body trauma or drama that it's had to deal with. Are there issues in your tissues? And what's your stress level? How well do you deal with that? All of that, I think, comes into play. Jane said, are Power Life classes appropriate for the Flipping 50 folks? Jane, I'm not familiar with Power Life classes. So can you say more about that? School me on that. Okay, you are. Sorry. All right. I'm being schooled right now. I'm just not paying attention. So that's par. They offer Bar, Sculpt, and Power 45-minute classes. My understanding is they incorporate cardio and strength with yoga in a heated room, 92 to 98 degrees. I've not attended yet. I'm wondering if you can get to true muscular fatigue with the strength movements, and if the heat will raise cortisol levels for too long and not provide all the important recovery. Any thoughts? They have locations in Omaha, Des Moines, Kansas City, and Tulsa. So here's my take on what has been quote deemed fusion. The fusion of this plus that must be better is I call BS. And in terms of if you're trying to gain strength and muscle mass, do strength training. And if you want yoga for mobility, flexibility, balance, just focus, concentration, do yoga. And if you enjoy doing it in a heated room, there will be a little bit more stress, but it's also, a little bit of detox. The question is, can your body handle it? And if you love it, sometimes the joy factor is one to play into. But like we would say, one long, slow workout a week, and that's your junk miles, and it's not going to hurt anything. So if you love it and you want to try it, I would try it. I would never, ever recommend combining weights and yoga, like meaning you're doing a yoga pose with a weight. No. I think it's crazy. So I went to one and, I'll never go back. I just don't see the value in it. You're not helping muscles fatigue. You're not getting to muscle endurance. You're putting the joint at risk for a move that is really kind of awkward, not normal. So the energy expenditure would go up. That would be the only asset. But yoga is not intended to be an energy expenditure kind of activity. So to me, it seems when we kind of come back to, okay, now we have to keep it between the navigational buoys. We have less time, meaning to the end, right? We need to really focus on the things that matter to us most. And I think that is pleasure and joy. What kind of movement gives you pleasure and joy? And what gives you the muscle for the strength and for the support of your bone density? What gives you the balance, the mobility, the agility? So slips and trips will happen, but falls don't have to, so that you're not prone to those things. And I would look at those and I think, this is where I need to spend my time because I have a budget. I think we all do. For time and a budget for energy. And so I don't have time for too much extracurricular activity that isn't laser focused on something, but it might be joy. So I'll say that to all of you. You may have something you absolutely love, but then I would always come back to, and you want results. So if you hear yourself saying, but I love that, I really want to do that, and I'm not getting results that I want, whether it's my muscle tissue is not growing, my metabolism is not where I want it to be, my strength isn't improving, libido, fatigue, energy, any of those markers of measure of success for you, but yet you're doing a lot of the things that aren't directly tied, then you kind of gotta, all right, how's my compromise? What am I willing not to give up? Like, what's your hard stop? Like, for me, many of you know, I like caffeine in the morning. So I'm not going to give that up. It elevates my cortisol level. I am well aware. I don't care. I'm still going to do it. So call that genetic if you want. I'm my mother's daughter. That kills me to say, but it's true. And so I think, find your joy factor. What is the thing you're not willing to give up? And work some of that in. If you're doing that 80-20 or the 90-10 rule, you have wiggle room. Those little things you're doing that this is not great for me and I know it, that is not going to hurt you. Now, if I were to go do an Ironman that takes 9 months really of preparation, so you're not hurt, you're well trained, that's going to throw me under the bus. That would be a silly thing to do, right? And right now, and I know it, right? So, there's things I can go for a really long hike if I want to. I could go for a really long bike ride. I'm going to be a little tired the next day, but I'm going to recover. So you've got to figure, what really do you love? And there are women who really love their bar class. And I would say very recently, one of the frequent guests that we've had on the Flipping 50 podcast, Gorgeous Esther, she goes by Esther Bloom, who is a registered dietitian. mentioned in some interview, and I can't remember where she was. She may have been on something big like Today Show, but she said, you know, I'm doing like a bar class or a fusion class right now and walking. I'm not doing heavy weights because she's in perimenopause and it kicked her, you know what, to do heavy weights and to do weightlifting. But she switched to bar. She feels better. And yet again, your thumbprint. Every woman's journey is different. You know, I felt absolutely different during perimenopause. I didn't know a thing was going to happen to me. No symptoms until I was 56. Nothing. And, you know, I thought, I'm going to get away with not having this. And then the universe said, oh, no, let me teach you a lesson. And it did. And so just want you to realize there's room for it. And it's true. Everything that you said here, Jane, lots of wisdom. And the only way for you to really know is test it yourself. So if you're drawn to it, you want to try it, realize it's probably not in direct alignment with what you want to do, most likely for mitigating menopause symptoms, meaning muscle or bone loss, brain health, stress level, cortisol. And yet, if you like it, that joy factor is going to override a little bit of that. If you've got great recovery habits, you'll probably be just fine to do it occasionally, but not all. Okay, great. And you know, really great job again thinking through all of that. So for any of you, I'm just going to hand you that. Lori says, looking to get back to strength in my hip. Don't want surgery, which might be the direction I'm headed. Would still need to get exercises to strengthen the muscles around the joint before having it done. I've been doing several, but it's pretty shaky right now. So there are two challenges, Lori. So one is the glute challenge, and that first set of exercises, I think I call them bundles, like this bundle number one is mostly floor based for getting to your glute medial muscle with very little stress on the joint itself. And then there is a hip challenge, kind of a corrective exercise challenge that would stretch and or strengthen that might be all pulling from. And remember that in the app, you can get to those challenges. You don't have to commit your life and sign it away, but you can get in there, look at those videos potentially and say, okay, I'm going to favorite this one because this is definitely what I need. So that would be potentially where I'd go for you. Susan said, do you recommend full fat dairy products, yogurt, cottage cheese, or low fat, and why? Okay, stop right there. I don't recommend dairy, period. So that's me. If you were going to do it, full fat would be the way I would go. Please refresh my memory on potential issues with whey protein. And whey protein is dairy. So dairy is inflammatory. And I'll tell you what, if you go online and social media, and please don't get your news like CNN on social media, but you will hear people say, what is that? It's inflammatory. And then you'll hear another registered dietitian say, this is not true. It's not inflammatory. Try it yourself. Okay. So, number one, if you have an autoimmune disease, meaning Hashimoto's, and by the way, if you have a thyroid issue and you're on thyroid med, 90% of us have Hashimoto's and don't know it, haven't been diagnosed. Don't let that alarm you. It's just true. And you will probably do better off of gluten and dairy, 100%. Not sometimes, not most of the time. Not, I only have a little in my cream in the morning. That's like an IV drip going in your body every single day, keeping the level high so that you feed that inflammation. And sometimes the very things, but I like it. I really love that. It doesn't bother me at all. Sometimes the things we love actually still are causing the problem. Think cocaine. I really like that. I need a hit. I need another one, right? And I know it's awkward. The same is true of exercise. So for back pain, We no longer think that one of the first things you should do in the morning is hug your knees to your chest. That was kind of an old recommendation in the 80s when I first started, and maybe still in the 90s a bit. But somewhere in the early 90s or 2000s, we realized that is not what we want to do. So, guest Dr. Stuart McGill, world-renowned back pain expert, said, no. We have this greater intervertebral pressure first thing in the morning. So we're actually making you think it feels good. Same if you have sciatica. You do that pigeon pose stretch, it feels so good. But did you know you're making it worse? And so it'll feel so good for a little while, like cocaine. And then you will need another hit because what you're doing is prolonging it and making it worse. And it's a whole different way to think about things. Like, dare doesn't bother me. If you're not at your ideal weight, your ideal energy level, digestion isn't a 4 out of a 4 in good, elimination isn't a 4 out of a 4, skin isn't a 4 out of a 4, it would be something I'd look at. But if you have autoimmune disease and you have aches and pains in your joints at all, definitely for Hashimoto's, lupus, rheumatoid arthritis, generally removing dairy 100%. We don't even bring it back and test it. We just find adequate substitutes for you instead. So I don't recommend dairy. We haven't since 2013. I personally haven't used dairy since I was 30. I started to train for marathons then. And for a runner, the reason to eliminate dairy is more the mucus. It's frustrating. So you're clearing your throat all the time and you just run better without. And I realize it's a great source of protein. I know many of you think, but it's a great source of calcium. It is, but you can get calcium all that you need from other foods. It's a myth. We were brought up to believe that you have to get milk or dairy products to get all the calcium that you need. You actually don't. You have to be a little bit more calculated about what you're getting, but you can get it from other foods just equally as well. So, that said, what I would still revert back to is if you've removed it for at least 3 weeks, and you can try a 28-day challenge if you're in the membership and look at how do you feel when you remove it. Some don't feel any better, don't feel any different. What they feel is the difference when they reintroduce it. And the way we do that is for 3 days, you have it at 2 or 3 meals, adequate serving, not a little cream in your coffee, because that's the way you're going to do it. We won't learn anything that way. You're going to have a full serving of yogurt. You're going to have a full serving of a glass of milk or whey protein in a shake. 2 or 3 days. Or 3 days in a row, but 2 or 3 times. That's the way you test. So you clear your gut out, you give it a chance to not have any, and then reintroduce it harder. Even though that's not the way you would eat it regularly, you will be finding out, does that bother you? Because most of us get this low-level inflammation. It doesn't bother me. Like, I don't, no stomach issue, no elimination issue. I'm fine, doesn't bother me, but yet our weight isn't good. It's not what we want. Body composition isn't good. And sometimes that can be a part of it. So food sensitivity is very different than food allergy. So we're not talking even about buying the lactose-free. Sometimes that works. The Tillamook, I think, is a brand of cheese that you can get that's lactose-free that might be helpful for some of you. Aged cheese sometimes is tolerated, but it still is an inflammatory food that joints generally know, and joints will improve within days if you remove it and you're being bothered by that. So just food for thought there. Okay. Pea protein. So plant-based for those of you who, number one, are vegan, you don't want whey, you absolutely don't want dairy. It's close to whey in terms of easily absorbed. It doesn't have quite the same high level essential amino acid profile. It doesn't have quite the same level of leucine, but it is very well used and absorbed by the body. It's just something that you may not want to have every single day. And some people are sensitive. Over 2016, 17, I think we've started with the Flipping 50 protein products. I've had maybe two people, maybe three, who don't tolerate pee. And so can't do it at all, but that's it. Shanna says, recovery question. Been trying to ramp up my strength training slowly. Mostly that's been okay. But I worked out on Saturday. Yesterday, my muscles were so sore and weak that I couldn't do my regular yoga routine. Not super challenging, but not nothing. I had to cut short my usual casual 2 mile stroll with the pooch. I kind of fell over while squatting down to do a chore because my quads or something were so tired. Today I'm a little sore, but mostly back to my regular yoga and work. Is that level of muscle tiredness normal and okay? Or is it a sign that I totally overdid it? I admit I didn't love that feeling of overworked muscles. Yes. That's not a normal response. A normal response might be that you're a little sore, and if you were walking the pooch or doing the yoga, you might notice, oh, I used something yesterday that I wasn't there. So more of a wake-up call. And there's what I would call like a delicious sweet spot where you go into a yoga pose on muscles. Targeting muscles that are a little bit sore, it doesn't feel great while you're doing it, but you do feel much better for having done it. So that doesn't sound at all like what you're describing. What you're describing is just something that kind of borderline more of a, an adrenal fatigue kind of thing. So, I would ask, and you haven't gone into this, but sleep, your hydration level, electrolytes, and nutrition in the recovery and in the prep for doing the exercise. Are you getting adequate calorie intake, high quality foods? And I think I'm preaching to the choir here, Shanna. So don't mean to put you on the spot, but I would look at those things, and then I would look at, does this happen frequently or was this a fluke? And just, mark it, say, okay, I'm picking up clues. I just got one today. And then go from there without thinking it's something. But if this happens regularly, then I think we want to look at what might be going on, because it's not a normal reaction. So I would say, let's try to solve the mystery as quickly as we can. Leslie says, I couldn't attend the Break the Midlife Symptoms Cycle seminar on 4:30. Will it be posted to the app to rewatch? If so, will it be in the masterclass category? So if it was a masterclass, yes. And if it was a masterclass, it actually should be up by now. So double check in that. And oh, hold on. So I know what you're talking about. You're talking about Laura Frontiero's presentation. So she's not, that was a guest, though I shared a friend. So that would be on her platform. If you registered for it, you should have gotten a replay. Absolutely. But I shared something that a friend of mine, a colleague of mine, was hosting. So you would need to reach out to her team about that, not me. So I hope that helps. Lacey says, can you get your ghrelin and leptin tested? Yes, absolutely. My husband says he's constantly hungry, never gets full. He had a doctor appointment today. I told him to ask about getting those things checked. The doctor said he'd never heard of doing that and acted like he didn't know the connection. Okay, I'm sorry to laugh. Hang on, I'll come back to that. My husband's sleep is terrible, and I know that's probably the reason, but I can only say so much. I totally understand. Anybody you're related to is probably the hardest case to crack, right? You might want to go to yourlabwork.com/flipping-50. And you can get there potentially at flipping50.com/resources and go to the page. I don't care if you don't order a lab test from them, but when you bring that up, you'll come to a page where if you scroll down a little bit, you can get, here are tests that you could order. And on the right side of that, it'll say, what will I learn from doing this test? So ghrelin and leptin are very related to cortisol. So if he's not sleeping, we know that cortisol is off, and even one night of sleep will make that true. So if cortisol is off, cortisol rocks the boat on ghrelin, the hunger hormone, and leptin, the satiety hormone. And so potentially, if he's in a really challenging, space there, that is the challenge or the problem that he's probably facing. So if potentially he's running into that, if it's a Western trained physician, not a functional integrative physician. And sometimes a Western trained doctor has gone through functional training because they realize they don't know what they don't know. They weren't taught this in school. Medical school, prepares them a lot more for treating a disease once we readily identify the disease, but not getting to the root cause and not throwing any physicians under the bus. But that's kind of the status of medical schools today. I think little by little we may start changing that, but in our lifetime we're probably facing this, especially if we have doctors that we've gone to for a long time who've been practicing for a long time. They're probably going to continue what they've done for a long time. So you'd need to either, do this yourself, and you're going to get something that will help you interpret it in terms of at yourlabwork.com/flipping-50. You will get an interpretation from someone on there, but that's not the only place to go. If you go to a Quest Labs, you will be able to order your own labs. You and I can do this. I started doing this back in 2014 and 15. I wrote and included in my book in 2015. You still got it, girl. Anytime we want to. I just did an at-home blood test very recently. Just was like the same thing, only more convenient. And again, you can choose to look at what markers you want to see. And you will get some support doing an interpretation. But again, you're suggesting he does it, and he may not be ready to go to that extent if it's not at least easy with somebody he's familiar with. So if I can offer this, it would be get all the support you can for his sleep, and whether that's sleep habits. The hygiene of the first 2 and the last 2 hours of the day can make a big deal. And or, similarly, the things that you're doing, taking magnesium to get to sleep or stay asleep, actually doing carbohydrates at dinner, and supporting, just good habits and cool and dark and quiet. Looking at what are the reasons why he wakes up, if there is there any chance he might have sleep apnea? Those things also might come into play. So I hope I've given you some, not just ideas, but maybe an idea to take an action on something. Jennifer said, what are you using for electrolytes? Now, I think I heard on one of your podcasts on videos you weren't using Element. Actually, I am, and funny that you said that today. So I went to the mailbox tonight. So I am using Element when I'm doing hiking and training on a just daily basis. I'll take much less of it, but when I'm doing hiking and training and it's hot outside, I definitely use it. So you'll see me pack a whole lot of that in the, coming months here, just being out and about. It was 81 today. And as we are on retreat in Boulder next month, there will be a lot of Element in goodie bags, and I will be using it too. So I just got a new one. So there is apparently a new flavor that I'm like, I did not need that. It's basically the Arnold Palmer of Element. So it is lemonade and iced tea, and it says has caffeine. And I'm like, shoo me now. I did not need that. That is not what I needed. But there you have it. What about Ultima? So I have used that too. The amount of sodium is just so much far lower. Ultima is nice. It's just what I would say, very passive. So it's kind of like an all day, every day. But I like that it tastes like grape Kool-Aid. And so there is that. But yes, so if you're just looking for something on a daily basis, you're not really exerting, or it's not really hot and humid out, you may be able to get away with Ultima. And if you're just beginning to use electrolytes, Ultima might be a great way to start. So much lighter, not nearly as significant, but you can dilute. So with a packet, let me see if I've got one right here. So with a packet of Element, I don't necessarily use this whole thing. You can choose, as they say, choose your salty. How much do you dilute it in? But I will, just take a fraction of it and put it a little bit. Actually, I have some right here. So I mix it. I hadn't had my creatine yet. Being a baby nanny is like powerful work. So I didn't get that in today. I was too distracted. So I'm catching up. Linda said, so helpful, Deborah. Thank you. I'd love to know your advice would be to a daughter or your daughter-in-law. So, and I think I gave it. Lacey said, any thoughts on the government's new dietary standards? I don't think they're all that new. So I don't know that they made all that great of changes. It was, fairly minimal. I think they expect that that was a big deal, but I do think they simplified it a little bit, and I think we're trying to do the same thing with the American College of Sports Medicine's recent update on resistance exercise. We're just trying to simplify it because 80% of, at least here in America, are not, doing what they need to do. So we've got to just make it easier and not so overwhelming. I mean, we could just say to everybody, stop eating junk food, stop eating processed food, and your life will probably change for the better. But not everybody's going to give that up. I mean, that is probably the boldest statement. But I think it's just, it's simplified it quite a bit. Shanna said that level of intense weak muscles has not happened before. I eat pretty well, no processed foods, plenty of veggies, fruit, animal protein, have been fueling with good protein before and after the workout. Sleep is going, and I'm working on that. Are you consuming carbohydrates outside of fruit? So any resistant starches like sweet potatoes, butternut squashes. So sometimes lack of recovery can be fewer carbs, not enough. Looking at beans or legumes, if you enjoy them, they offer both a little protein, but also fiber, and they're resistant starches, meaning resistant to being stored as fat. So that can be another thing. Yes, sweet potatoes, reheated potatoes, legumes, perfect. Okay. So I don't have a real good answer for you, but fortunately, maybe it was a fluke. And, just take that as a clue. Take that as, okay, that just happened. Maybe not something that we'll have to deal with again, but just realize it's there. And as long as you're here and you're saying, okay, this is what happened, this is how I felt, I would document a little bit more and see if the day before, the day after, write it all down. If there's anything that might have jumped out or could, to put together a clue if it happens again, would be the best that you can do at this point. Okay. Great questions, everybody. Thank you so much. You're welcome. Anybody else have something? And Linda, did I answer well enough? So the advice would be let's do everything else first. Let's look at, your diet and what is the biggest challenge. Is it food noise? You can't stop thinking about it, and so it almost feels compulsive. I've heard this described by clients before as, and I want to tell all of you, we're all like very articulate, intelligent women with life experience. We know ourselves pretty well, and we probably know whatever we've done, for our vocation or lives, we're probably somewhat by now of an expert in that. So I think we've all got to give ourselves as we are very intelligent. This is not lack of knowledge or knowing, but I think that there is this piece of, we have to figure out what is the calling. Like, we know what to do and we can do it for a while, but if there is an overriding mental signal and a cue that just is like a trigger, it again, it's much more like an alcoholic or a drug addict for a lot of people. And if you can't relate to it, it's very hard to be over there and experience what they're experiencing. But again, I think that's where this comes in. If you want to do this as a pit stop before you would do GLP-1 to say, okay, well, this is over the counter. I can activate GLP with this. I can support myself if appetite or cravings is a part of the problem. And they have quite a bit of science behind it showing the decrease in the amount of cravings percentage-wise and the decrease in hunger signals. So important to look at, and it's not squelching your own ability to provide GLPs, which we know, when you take the GLP, you are turning yours off. So the goal in coming down is you got to find a way to turn that back on. We've got to flip that switch on again, or there will be weight gain on the other side of it. So you have to be in for the long game, realize this is a behavior change, not, just a quick fix where you can take it. Jane said, are beets considered resistant starches? They're not. Actually, they're a little bit more of a starchy, higher sugar vegetable. They don't qualify in that group. However, they would not be something I would say don't ever eat them because they're so rich in other things that are good for you. When I use beets, so I don't know if anybody's here who has attended a retreat or if we had it, but I have in the cafe, we've had a recipe for harvest salad, which is, as it sounds, fall veggies like roasted beets and sweet potatoes, and eating them together with high protein and a lot of fibrous veggies, perfectly okay. So I wouldn't avoid them just because of that, but I wouldn't have them alone because they're not a resistant starch. But by the way, a little trivia, if you want to know how fast your motility works, beets will tell you. So when you see that come out the other end, you don't want to think, oh, I got blood in my stool. No, it's the beets, but it will tell you if you eat them today, how soon do you see them? And sometimes that's a good thing just out of curiosity. So having babysat an 8-month-old for the last 4 days, like, yeah, I know how quickly everything comes back out. Shanna says, what do you think about oxidative high greens like beet greens, spinach, and chard? So oxalate, it depends on the person. But generally, cooked is always going to be better. I find, and personally, I used to be a salad person. Like I eat salads all the time. I no longer eat very much raw food at all. I cook all the veggies. I don't have lettuce salads. I'll go through a buffet now, and I used to load my plate with salad. I no longer do, and I feel so much better not. I'd rather have cooked vegetables, so mildly, not overcooked. and slightly cooked. And there are some things that I will have raw and usually pay for it. Just, I don't feel as good. Your body has to work a little bit harder. So I think definitely though, with any oxalates, I would cook them first. So I will have steamed spinach. I don't have spinach salads anymore. So for most of us, we're probably going to be a little bit more sensitive with menopause gut. By the way, Cynthia Thurlow's new book is out. It's a huge eye-opener. And, for some of you who may be struggling to get where you want, reading that, even if you feel like you're way past menopause, you still had the changes in your gut that occurred during menopause. So that can be a huge opener, or eye-opener, sorry. Makes sense. I wouldn't eat anything of those greens raw. Ick, right? Raw lettuces, yes. Yeah. So definitely cook them, and you eliminate a huge percent of them. But I would also pay attention to, rotating greens, getting them in. There are some great things that you can get in them, but if you're the more you cook them, the better. So I used to eat a raw kale salad, and I wish I did. I love it. But the only time I've eaten kale recently is I tear them up and put them in soup at the in the last 10 minutes or so. Okay, I think we've got all questions well covered. So thank you for firing away at me, everybody. These are great, and we will get this posted so it's up there. Anybody have questions? And I will say this to anybody who's here in the membership, I guess.